to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Well, hello there, Brains. And thank you for joining us here on The Edge, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Today, we have a fantastic author, speaker, and entrepreneur on The Edge with us. She is the author of The Best Worst Thing That Happened to Me, Walasco Lazo. She is coming to us from Canada, and she is going to share with us how hitting rock bottom after emotionally devastating turn of events propelled her on a spiritual journey of reclaiming her hidden power and transforming her from victim to the architect of her life. I'm excited to have her here, and give it your full attention, Brains. This is going to be a great, compelling, informational interview. Good morning, Waleska. How are you?
Thank you, April, for this opportunity and everyone listening. I'm humbled to share with you a little bit of my life and my lessons and my journey so far.
Well, you have such an exciting story, and I'm so glad that you have taken the time to put pen to pad, write it down, create a guideline and a template for other people that might be going through some challenges in their life to know that they can overcome, they can excel and propel. Tell us a little bit about your journey. I know that you are originally from Central America, Nicaragua, and your journey to Canada. Share that with us.
Yes. Thank you. It's interesting about storytelling because I believe that every person has a story to tell. You know, we've all have lived through something, survived something, overcame, achieved, lost, and loved something. And obviously some people more than others, of course, but the beautiful thing about it is that through the stories we tell, it's how we get connected. You know, it's how we connect to our humanity, and it's what linked us so that we can learn and give us a glimpse of hope and what is possible. So I was born in Corinto, which is a colonial Spanish port located in the northwest coast of Nicaragua in Central America. And I grew up in a Spanish home, you know, very traditional, where everyone lives together. In North America, you don't see that, but you know, at home, I grew up with all my aunts, uncles, grandparents, great-grandparents, and in a very religious home. I grew up most of my childhood with my grandmother, who is, you know, very religious. So you could say that I grew up with a strong sense of faith. And I was always taught to look for the silver lining in things. Through that, I've learned many lessons. And one of the first lessons that I have learned is that the universe is always there to guide you through signs, you know, for a higher purpose. So let me give you a little bit of, you know, background as to why I came to Canada. So 1979, a civil war broke down in Nicaragua that forever changed my life. The repressive regime made it extremely difficult for Nicaraguans to enjoy life. And if you are not one of them, you're always on guard for your life. And in the case of my family, unfortunately, our every move was watched. And through the hand of God, one morning, my father, who was a doctor, received an anonymous call to take his family out of the city of León, where we were living at the time. And we didn't question, we didn't know who it was, but we packed one bag and we left for Corinto, which is the island where I grew up. And the very next day, we had word that our home, along with all the ones in the neighborhood, had been bombed and burned down in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. So many people that we knew died that night. And for some reason, my life was spare. And I like to think that it was for, you know, a great purpose. And because our home was burnt down, we had to stay in the island, and there were no great schools there. So at a very young age, I was sent to a boarding school away from my family in a different city. And that marked a very difficult time in my life because I was away from them, you know, at an age where a child meets their parents. And I remember the few times that I was able to travel to the island to visit my family and having to go back to the convent, it was devastating for me because I would hide under the bed so that my parents couldn't find me to send me back.
Wow.
But by 1986, the political situation in Nicaragua had worsened, and we were living under a very extremely repressive and paranoid government. There was no food, so we had to live on, you know, a single soap, a bar soap for the week, a pound of sugar, 2 pounds of rice, a case of eggs, a can of oil for a family of six. And toilet paper was a commodity that we did not enjoy.
Mm.
Yeah. So at the time.
And I'm sure that was quite a culture shock because you grew up with a doctor.
Having everything.
A trained medical professional.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that you had, you know, a little bit more affluent maybe than other people that didn't have that. But I want to touch on something else. Now, you are of Jewish faith, but you were going
mm-hmm.
to a Catholic school.
Catholic
How
school,
did that
yes.
impact
mm-hmm.
your life as well?
Well, in Nicaragua, if you want to go to the best schools, they're all Catholic. So
okay. You
have no choice. You go to a Catholic school. And so it's just there were 200 families, if that, in the capital that were Jewish descent. So, you know, you learn to live.
People don't really associate the Jewish faith or being Jewish with, you know, anything outside of maybe Israel. They don't think about in Central America that there could be people sharing that same faith, belief. How did that
mm-hmm.
come about? Did you have family that was originally from Europe that
yes,
moved to Nicaragua?
Yes, exactly.
Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. My mother's side of the family comes from France. And my dad's side of the family, like his dad, came from Barcelona, and they migrated to Nicaragua. Mm-hmm. But,
okay.
I mean, Jewish people are all over the world, and you're right. A lot of people think of being Jewish with Israel, but there are Jews in every single corner of the world.
Right, absolutely. Okay, so fast-forwarding, you and your family moved to Canada. How did you get to Canada from the island?
Oh, well, as I said, you know, the political situation was getting worse and worse. And at that time, my father was appointed to look after the health of political prisoners. And what he started to do is to forge medical papers and exams to have them, you know, to get them permission to go to a hospital. And from there, he would help some of them escape. So he was in very deep. And because the government couldn't prove that he was the one arranging for their escape, they asked him to join the ranks of government. And I believe it was a test. And when he declined, my three brothers were kidnapped. 3 days later, they were found in an alley. And they were, at the young ages, they were in, you know, questioned about my father's activities and opinions towards the revolution. That same week, I remember clearly being in the car with my parents. I was in the back seat sleeping, and a bomb was thrown at our car, and all the windows exploded. Again, my life was spared for a higher purpose, I like to think. And, you know, sometimes when I tell my children this story, it's almost like a Hollywood movie, but not for us, not for many Nicaraguans. So by 1987, at a great risk, we've managed to escape from Nicaragua to Canada. Under the Immigration and Refugee Act, and ever since, Canada has been my home. So, you know, coming to Canada as an immigrant has taught me a lot of things, and one of the things I've learned is that life plays no favorites. It gives you exactly what you're willing to ask of it. We each have the power to create the life we want. And I hope that everyone listening out there can take note of this, because it's true. Anything is possible if you want it hard enough and if you're willing to pay the price and the sacrifice to get there. I came to North America with nothing, with all the odds stacked against me. No language, no connections, no money, no friends, no family to help you. And at the age of 17, I had to work 15-hour days in a factory folding sweaters to help my mother put food on the table. I later found a job cleaning an office building at night so that I could go during the day to finish my high school. And, you know, it was very difficult. I would study in the subway and in buses. I worked nights until about 11:30, go to school the next morning, struggling to learn a new language. And I tell my girls this story because they now live a life of privilege, and I want to ensure that they understand that nothing comes from nothing. I never forget my mother and I saw a big mattress in the garbage behind the low-income building we lived in. You know what they say, someone else's garbage is someone else's treasure? That
right.
became our bed, you know, at the start of a new life. You know, our clothing for the first few years came from Salvation Army and Goodwill stores, and to help us manage to supplement with, you know, we lived out of food stamps from organizations here in Toronto. I would line up with my mom on Spadina Road at the Scott Mission, and very quickly I learned to love eating food from cans and macaroni boxes. You know, they became a staple on our table.
Right, right, absolutely.
But that's how we started.
Delicacy.
Yeah. And,
so,
you know, go ahead.
So I was saying, so you went through all of these trials and tribulations, and you went and you achieved a degree, and you got married,
mm-hmm.
and doing some other wonderful things. Springboard us to where you really kind of also found another downward spiral that you experienced.
Okay,
a sense of
sure.
Loneliness.
Yeah, so after earning a four-year, you know, BA in political science and a master's in criminal justice, I got married and we created our first business, which was an ed tech company that helped universities deliver their courses and degree programs online. And it became one of the most successful distance learning, you know, services out there. And it's funny because a lot of people will say, well, was it easy? Was it an overnight success? And I always laugh and I say, yes, it was an overnight success that took 15 years of working 12-hour days and, you know, leaving and returning home when it's dark. And
right.
because our business was 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 a year, you can imagine how taxing it was on our relationship. And when our friends were buying cars and taking vacations, we were bootstrapping it. And the dream that began just the two of us out of our bedroom grew to become one of the most successful companies in our space. In 2007, we sold that business. And what was amazing is that, you know, the one thing that had defined my life for so long was gone. And suddenly I found myself having no purpose. And when all the dust and the craziness and stress of running a business settled, I realized, you know, the huge sacrifice, and that took a toll on our marriage. So I lost perspective. My girls were little, so my focus was on them, but I felt purposeless. You know, I would wake up every day not knowing what to do, and that, you know, I became very unhappy with my life. I started to question the purpose of my existence. I didn't know whether I had any gifts to offer the world, and I had this crazy desire to control everything, that it had to become someone that I didn't even recognize.
Wow.
So, you know what they say, sometimes, you know, the best things in life come hidden in the most painful and challenging circumstances. And that brought me to a complete change in my life, because I was so unhappy that I held those around me responsible for my own happiness. And now I know that happiness is an inside job. But instead of taking responsibility for my own happiness and the emptiness I felt, it was easier for me to just blame others. And to numb the emotional struggle that I was in, I began to fill myself with whatever I could to give me pleasure. You know, I filled myself with food, focusing on a certain weight, looking for better, for more, looking always for the next goal, the next gratification. And the sad part was getting there and feeling unfulfilled just the same. So nothing was enough at that time in my life. And,
so you've documented all of this in your book, The Best Worst Thing That Happened to Me. Some of the things that you talk about in the book is how making a shift from a lack of gratitude leads to miracles, the importance of healing limited beliefs, recognizing that you are not alone, the universe steers and guides your path, how to relinquishing control speeds manifestation, why gratitude puts you in a flow with the universe, that things, everything in life has a reason and a purpose. And as you said, happiness and fulfillment are an inside job. These are some of the great, powerful, jam-packed pages inside of your book. Share with us a little bit about one or two of those things that you really find help other people when you're sharing your story and your journey.
Well, the most significant lesson that I've learned was gratitude. You know, and it came to me, it was such a profound moment. I was in the middle of a nervous breakdown. I had ended a very toxic relationship after my marriage had ended. That was really the perfect storm. And I remember my ex-husband came and saw me crying, and I had lost my voice from screaming and crying so much. And he looked at me and he said, "Find the gift in your pain."
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. Find the gift in your pain. And at that moment, I had no clue what he meant by that. But it sat with me. You know, I repeated that phrase over and over in my head. And then I realized that I was too focused on all the things I thought I lacked in my life, always focusing on all the things I thought I needed in order to be happy, and never bothered to look at all the things I had, all the things I had accomplished. So I decided to shift, to make a shift in my life. And the most profound thing that anyone can do out there is to start your day in gratitude.
Right.
And it just became as an exercise, as a routine. I would wake up, and instead of leaving my bed, I dedicated 5 minutes to spending gratitude. And it was gratitude for everything that I had in my life. You know, and at the beginning, it was difficult to come up with things, you know, to be grateful for, you know, except for the obvious things, you know, your kids, your husband, your job. But very quickly, you find so many things to be grateful for. And that sets your tone for the day, for the weeks, for the months. And, you know, it became such a habit for me that without even realizing, I wasn't having negative thoughts. I was not longer in pain. I was not longer feeling the victim. I felt in power because I felt grateful for everything that I had. And I remember one morning doing my gratitude list and thinking, oh my gosh, like there is absolutely nothing that I want other than more of what I already have. And that's how I knew I was making the shift.
Right. And, you know, for a period there, it sounds like you had a little bit of amnesia because you had forgot all of the things that you had been through, the bombing, and leaving your family and having to go away from your family to go somewhere else to go to school, being subjected to such cruelty by your own government. So there was a lot of things that you probably could have been even more grateful for, but you were in that fog and you really couldn't come out of it. And so I think writing that book has really done a lot for you and will do a lot for others. But in addition to writing the Best Worst Thing That Happened to Me, you're also an author of some children's books. Please share with my brains about that. I think that is a phenomenal genre, And I think it's very powerful because you're able to really share some important facts from an adult, but also looking at it from a child's perspective.
Yes, you know, because I am a mom and I see how my kids learn, you know, when they're young, you have a great opportunity to really shape the little adults that they're going to grow up to be. And I thought, why couldn't I teach all the concepts that I have learned the hard way and start when they're young? Like I always say, if I have started to do the, you know, to live the spiritual life that I live a lot younger, I wonder where my life would be. So it became more of a passion for me to take certain concepts or, you know, write about people's life that have achieved great things and tell the story, you know, in a way that a child can understand. So for the stories, I take a certain value and I tell that story of that person through that value. So one of the books that I have written is about Eli Cohen, which was an Israeli spy working for the Mossad. And I tell a story through the lenses of bravery, you know, trying to teach a child what it's like to be brave and stand up for something that you believe in, you know, to stand up for discrimination and bullying, which is so prevalent in our schools today. So,
right.
Yeah, I wrote that one. And I also written a book called Confessions from a Mom to Her Child. And, you know, that's truly a work of love. I try to take someone in a journey from beginning to end, the entire cycle of life, and what a mother goes through from the moment that child is growing inside her to
wow.
the moment of birth and all the things that a mother needs to tell her child in preparation for the birth.
Do you take them through the labor pain, too?
Yeah. Yes.
Because it's not a bed of roses. It's not all, you know, ice cream and cake. There is definitely some challenges there. Well, you know what? I commend you. You are definitely a survivor. You are a warrior. You're a powerful author. And Brains, I have a very exciting announcement for you. Waleska has been so gracious as to donate a couple of her books to be in our month of April's drawing. So, you know, I always love to give you a swag bag or a nice love offering featuring my wonderful guests here from On the Edge. And so I want you to be sure to listen to this interview, share it with your friends, go in and like our page here and Waleska's pages. She will have a link to those via my page, and she'll also be giving you her information. But I want you to touch this. I want this to touch your heart. I want it to plant a seed, and I want something beautifully to grow organically from this message, from this woman's story, because it is amazing. Waleska, can you tell my Brains how to get in contact with you, how to definitely if they want to have you there for a speaking engagement? I'm sure you can travel anywhere around the world, or also purchase a copy
Absolutely.
Of one of your fantastic books.
Thank you. Yes, the best place to get in touch with me is through my website, and it's waleskalazo.com, so www.waleska.com, and I'll spell it for you. It's WaleskaLazo, Z as in zebra. So it's my first name, my last name together, .com. And, you know, drop me a line, and I'm, you know, we'll be happy to hear from you.
Brains, you know, we have to do everything that we can to be grateful. Don't take it for granted. When you open your eyes and you inhale breath, that is a gift. And if you have to dodge a bullet or you have to escape, know that there is other opportunities for you to propel on the other side and share that story. Be a bridge that's going to carry someone else safely across. Thank you so much, Waleska, for coming here to visit with
me
on the Edge. You're welcome. And Brains, I want you to go back. I need you to follow me. I need you to sign up here on Blog Talk Radio so that you can get every new episode that's popping up. We got a whole bunch of great stuff coming up the month of April. I can't believe it. I am overwhelmed. We've got art, entertainment, music, science, more great authors. Go and sign up on Spotify. I'm trying to raise those Spotify numbers, but I'm here for you to give you all the information that you can have to be a good person on the edge. Thanks so much again, Waleska. Come back, share with us about your book and the other great things that you're doing in the world. We'd love to have you. You always have a seat at the table.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
All right, brains, go out and have an extra fantabulous day. I'm watching. Bye.